I'm Anna.
And I'm Laura.
And this is Grounded Vitality.
Oh, January.
I feel like, okay, we're going to talk about January, but was Christmas weird this year for you?
So weird. Yes.
Okay. It was weird for us this year too. And then I just, everyone I talked to was like, it was weird. And someone on the internet, they were like, hey, is this Christmas weird for you? It might be because there's been so much turmoil and overhaul the past few years, and people just seeing things differently and thinking about their lives differently, that Christmas, which is traditionally a time of a lot of tradition, but not necessarily like a live tradition, a lot of us are like, huh, this doesn't quite fit anymore. Like, yeah, so I don't know. So like Christmas was weird for us. I think I did a good job of just being like, you know what? I'm just not going to force anything. And I'm going to trust that like, as time goes on, our family grows and changes, we'll figure out what we want to do for Christmas. But this year was kind of like a letting go, I think, for us of like, okay, we're not doing that. And we're not doing that. And no one's set up that. So I guess we're just not going to do that. But yeah, I thought it was a weird time, which of course doesn't necessarily set us up for success in January, depending on how we took the weirdness.
You know, there's some festivals that my family would do that aren't happening anymore, or things that it was actually a relief. I feel like I just got to rest more than I usually do during Christmas. And I kind of dread that flurry of activity and that, you know, baking takes a lot of time and you have to have this stuff ready by the time you go do this thing, that there's so much prep involved that it becomes like a full-time job on top of everything else. That and the end of the year as a self-employed person is extremely paperwork heavy. And, you know, I just get really frustrated with all of the expectations. And I felt delighted that everything was kind of canceled this year. And even my parents and I said, oh, let's do our Christmas on January 1st. And then my mom got COVID. And so we had to cancel that. And now we moved from January 1st to January 20th, because shortly after she got COVID, I got a cold and this cold just keeps hanging on. And it's just kind of a relief. And I got to buy some gifts on the after Christmas sales, which was great because I hadn't planned ahead very well. So yeah, I'm relieved also to hear that it was weird for other people.
Yeah, no, it was weird for us for all sorts of reasons. And I think similar, like the similar sentiment of there's things that you like about it, but it's also like, but why am I doing this? Why am I putting all this pressure on myself? And so to have that be like gone. And like, yeah, like I said, I was like, similar things where some family get-togethers got changed because all sorts of different things. And then I just didn't push Christmas. Like I didn't try to do all the things. I was like, it'll get there. Whatever we end up doing, we'll end up doing. Like last year, we had a similar attitude towards a tree. We're like, if it just aligns, like if it just one weekend we're out and we're like, let's go get a tree. We'll get a tree. If it doesn't, who cares? But it was like, but yeah, so it just like, okay, let it go. And then, cause I'm just thinking like, there's so many things I like, but there's things that I don't like, and I want to rebuild. Cause I do like Christmas in that time of year. But I want to, it's like, cause I like the ideas of solstice too. So it's a kind of nice to like take a break and then like, okay, let's maybe start to rebuild things that are actually meaningful to us and our family, as opposed to just doing them because that's kind of what we've always done or what you're supposed to do. Or so yeah, it was weird for me and another friend, and their Christmas was also weird. So yeah, it's just a weird time of year. And then I had our family's gone through a lot, and so it was also just some conversations of the holidays are great, but they're also a reminder of like what's not quote unquote normal in your life. Like day to day, you don't necessarily think about that stuff. But then when you get to the holidays, you're like, oh, right. Yep. And so just had some of that conversation. It just kind of puts in your face some of that harder stuff. So, it was also nice to actually have that conversation instead of everyone just pretending like life is normal. Like, true. Not normal. Things are different and it sucks. So,
yeah. And this is when we miss them the most.
Yeah, because it's most obvious that they're gone.
Yeah, the memories, the pictures, the stuff.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Hopefully it sounds like you're making something good out of it, something new and lovely. Yeah. I'm thinking about my parents in a weird way now as they're aging too. Like, I want to hold on to all the times that I can. I know, I mean, they're in their 70s. They're not, you know, super old, but losing my grandma recently, we think about these things and go, you know, memories are for making, and that being together is what matters. It doesn't matter if we're doing it perfectly or if it looks a certain way.
That, if all the decorations are up when you do it.
I know, right? My mom and I have been hoping to come up with some gluten-free lefse recipe for years. And we still go, ma, maybe next Christmas. But, you know, and I've had this tradition of making nuts because I like to give things to people around the holidays, but, you know, it gets expensive. So I just roast a bunch of cinnamon nuts and give them away to everyone that I can. And usually it's for Christmas. And I'm like, maybe we're having New Year's nuts this year because I've still got to roast those. And it's mid-January. But I figure since it's an election year, I can probably make some type of pun with my nuts for the new year.
Here, have some nuts so you don't go nuts.
Exactly. I'm going to come up with that clever.
So then coming into the new year, like, I don't know, I've vacillated from year to year. I've definitely done the resolutions. I forgot the word. I've done the resolutions and goals, but I've also, like, then in more recent years, it's more like intentions or themes that I wanted to bring into the year. And this year, I think I just more was like, it's just more been thinking about, like, what do I want to do right now in the middle of January? Like, not that much is changing in my life. I mean, I guess I did have a schedule change. And so that was exciting, but it was like, it's like, not that much is changing. I'm kind of in the middle of everything in the sense, because it's still just winter. It's still just, you know, long, short days and long nights. So this year, I think I walked in with more, I'm always working on stuff. So it was like, let's just keep this stuff going and maybe use a little bit of the new year, like, energy to kind of just keep moving with it and, like, but not try to upset the apple cart and, like, put all this new stuff on myself. And even for New Year's, what did we do? I sat on the couch with my kids and my husband, and we just went through my photos because I was like, what even happened this year? I don't even remember what we did. Like, and so we just went through photos and it was fun because we, like, remembered things. We got to see how much the kids changed. And like, okay, cool. Well, happy New Year. And then we just went to bed. And,
That's fun. I love that. Yeah. Like a reflective.
Yeah.
It's like, almost like looking to the past and appreciating it instead of being like, what do I need to fix about my life for the future? At least there's enough voices out there now that are critical of the resolutions too, that I feel less alone to be like, nah. Yeah. I start financial resolutions because I have paperwork things happening that I go, like, I want to track money better. I made myself a little Google form.
Yeah.
That I'm going to just track better.
Yeah.
And who knows? I hope that I can stick with it. I'm trying.
Yeah.
But it's just, other than changing some things about how I do money because it just works fiscal year wise, I don't really care about resolutions.
Yeah. I saw something recently that's like, resolutions have, like, failure baked in the cake, like, just based on, like, the attitude we have towards them. And I think also just the jokes that are so consistent of, like, the gym January 1st, the gym February 1st, and, like, the gym's packed on January 1st and empty on February 1st. And yeah, we try to do everything. And it's like, these resolutions are never tempered. They're never reasonable. They offer, like, no flexibility. It's always like, this is the year I'm gonna blah, blah, blah. And we, like, want to start it tomorrow. And you're like, maybe let's ease into it a little bit more. And then, yeah, this year I've been more aware of people just talking about, like, why are we so focused on January 1st? This is not the time for, like, lots of new things and lots of new energy. Like, you're still in the middle of winter. You're still in the, and so I also like the idea of, like, just kind of more contemplation. And I even saw someone that was like, just let things fall away maybe in January, like January, February, just let, like, whatever's been falling away and you've been thinking about for the new year, just, like, keep it more in, like, the thought stage of, like, what don't I want? What don't I want? How do I want this to be? And then spring, when literally the whole, well, not the whole earth, our part of the earth perks up and, like, comes back to life, maybe that's a better time to or build momentum up to that time. And then in the spring, once the sun starts coming out again and you're not going to work in the dark and coming home in the dark, you know, maybe that's a better time to actually start thinking about new things. But I like what you said too, like you're financially, it makes sense for you to do financial stuff this year. And then it's appropriate because you had an end point. So now it's like, okay, I'm doing this whole process again. How do I want it to be this time?
I like what you said about letting things fall away, because I feel like I have a hard time letting go of things or obligations or things that I thought I was supposed to still complete or, you know, stick with, that in this midwinter feeling when I also feel like I can barely muster enough to do a regular day. It's like, what is still weighing me down and what could I slough off? I did go on a rampage of canceling subscriptions and things. I don't really need that. Or, you know, gosh, I get so frustrated with these products that it's like, well, you could save 10% if you subscribe. And then I think, well, that's nice. And maybe I can manage that subscription. And I never do. I never do. The charge always comes. And then I have twice as much stuff as I need. And I'm just like frustrated at myself. And I just, another one came through, like a bunch of stuff came through. And I was like, ah, cancel, cancel, cancel. I'm sick of this. Like,
Yeah. There's a couple times a year when it's a good time to clean out even just your email subscriptions, right? When everyone sends their security agreement update and you're like, I haven't bought from that company in 10 years. Why am I still their email list? and all that Cyber Monday stuff. I actually used like the Cyber Monday, all the different holiday sales. I actually used that time to be like, no. Like,
I actually don't care about your stuff.
I don't want any of that stuff. And I started to take the attitude of like, okay, between data sharing and I don't know, the vibrational universe, I'm like, if there's something I really need or want, it'll come to me. Like between Facebook knowing all my information and, you know, the universe knowing me, it's like, it'll come back. I do not need to stay subscribed to this company to wait for a sale for something that I don't even want right now. It just adds like stress and pressure. Like, oh, should I get that? But I shouldn't, but I do have money, but I could get it 15% off and I won't be able to get 15% off at another time when I really want it. Like all that, you know, are you really saving money if you go buy stuff on sale that you weren't going to buy? Like, you know, that whole thing.
So true. I'm going to use that strategy. Yeah. I usually clear my inbox once I just have reached a level of overwhelm that I just want to burn it all down.
It's so bad. I don't let my husband look at my email because he keeps his inbox like zero. He gets all the emails, but they get filtered immediately into folders. If it goes in a folder, it's gone. I don't know about it. I'm never going to look at it again. So I have to keep it in my inbox because I have to see it.
Yeah.
And then
to torture me.
And then I just scroll past it and look for the important emails, open like 3 out of the 50 I get in a day.
Too real. I always hope. And then, okay. So I just saw a thing that was like, hey, for $37, you can buy this course to teach you how to manage all your digital stuff better. And I'm like, ah, yes, I want to buy this, but ah.
You're like, am I a meme right now? Bye. I don't consider that.
Yeah. So of course, I just subscribed to her emails and hope that I will think about doing it later.
I hope I'll read them.
What the hell is wrong with me?
Nothing that's not wrong with the rest of us.
Oh, you are so kind.
No, the new year, all the pressure to do the new things and buy the things and like, and it's tough. And my financial history is up and down. Unrestricted buying, not having the right mindset of like, oh, I'll earn that, I'll buy that, and then I'll earn the money, that thing. And then super restricting myself. So yeah, it's definitely changed to like being more conscientious of what I'm going to buy and when I'm going to buy it, who I'm going to buy it from, and trying not to just do the impulse purchases and really convincing myself that, hey, that's on sale, that's super cool. Are you really going to do it right now? If it really is meant to be, either you'll catch it when it's on sale again, or you'll have the funds to do it when you need to do it. Just taking that step back of like, there's so much out there, which is awesome. And ads are so great because like these amazing products come to your attention. I think it's so cool. I just wish they weren't selling our data. That's the only thing. I'm like, you can have my data. That's fine. Like you can have my data and tell me about the cool new product and then I'll see if I want to buy it. I think it's great. And because then, so then that allows me to go, yeah, so I'm just not going to worry about, I don't know, following all these different things. Yeah. Anyways, where was that with the news? Finances.
It's all kind of wrapped together, I feel, because so many products want to make us, you know, it's It feels very capitalist.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is like the New Year's is the time when people really want to dig into your insecurities, because that's also what a lot of the New Year's is about, is like, what's wrong with me? How can I fix it? As opposed to like, what's going well? How can I keep it going? Or what's going well? How can I get better? And so I was going to do a post and just about, I think actually I did in my other world of fitnessy stuff, where it's like, hey, like this is the time of year where they're going to like try to hook you with all your insecurities. Know that not a single course or workout program or diet regime is going to make you worthy. You're already worthy. You're totally fine. So find the one that's going to support you in supporting yourself. Like all this, and I don't see as much of it anymore, I think, because I filtered a lot of that stuff out, but I know it's still out there. The 6 weeks to this and 10 weeks to that and 2 weeks to this and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, like going into the holidays, somewhere around Thanksgiving, everyone gives up their resolves, eats like garbage. And then they try to do another 180 on January 1st and try to eat clean, whatever that means. And it's like, it's just a like wackadoo. And then all these companies want to feed into your insecurities, which, you know, it wouldn't work if we were confident in ourselves. I don't think you should feed into people's insecurities, but also if our insecurities weren't there, they wouldn't be able to do it. Their marketing wouldn't work.
True.
So it's kind of a little bit.
Well, that makes me feel a little better too, because sometimes I wonder, am I dead inside? Because ads don't shake me like they used to. They don't get me. And I'm like, am I missing something? Or am I just like so secure that you can't get me like you used to? And I mean, I'll still cry at your ads with dogs or whatever, but you know, it just feels, it hits different. You can kind of see, I don't know.
You
can
see through it. Like,
yes.
Like you kind of are like, you can see what the mechanisms are behind the scenes. And you're like, I see that.
True.
I'm good.
Kind of like detecting AI pictures online. Yeah, like I'll look around. Everybody's been talking about the crocheted octopus that it's like, it's a crocheted octopus blanket that everyone says, oh, I need that. I need that. And there've been a lot of makers that are saying, you know, that would probably be thousands of dollars to make by a person.
Yeah.
And that the image was generated by AI. And I felt really proud of myself, because when I looked at the image, I looked at the context of the image, and it was on a couch, and these stuffed animals on the couch just looked like a fever dream. They didn't look like real stuffed animals. They were just arms and ears and just disgusting. Yeah. And I was like, this is not a real image. Like this is
completely manufactured.
Yeah. That it has that same feeling where it's like, oh, I'm detecting something not right about this. So I'm just gonna tune it out. And then inevitably I, you know, doubt myself and go, am I somehow broken because I'm not affected by this? Or I guess what a weird world we're living in right now. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's so strange. It's such a strange world. Well, and also once you learn certain things, it's so funny how like things that were kind of maybe funny to you in the past, you're like, that's not as funny as I thought it was. Like just like even how humor changes, like because we learn more things about ourselves or about the world, or we change our values change, or we get a better understanding of what we really believe. Like if you want a new car, or even just car you have, you see your car everywhere, or the car you want, you see it everywhere. It's like, so then all of a sudden you see that whatever that is that you're like just woke up to or just like became aware of it, and you're like, oh my god, it's everywhere. Like how did I not see this before?
I'm not as gullible as I used to be. Does that make me bad?
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. I am a little cynical, and that's okay.
It's like a healthy skepticism. It's not a bad thing. And like to point and to like learn things that you like don't care about and that are shoved in your face. I think it's totally fine to be like, I'm done with that. The advertising, I mean, that's been around since forever. And it's, I mean, they know what to do. They've been studying this. I mean, how much of psychology has got to be just for advertising or how much advertising took psychological research, you know? It's, I mean, they do a very good job at it. And also like being on the flip side, being like a creator and wanting to sell things, like learning about authentic sales and learning, trying to put the intention behind whatever I put out there to be like, this is a thing that I think that'll help. And I'm going to use those tactics to try to catch your attention of everything else. But hopefully it has a feel of realness behind it, you know, like you did get hooked by the helping you with finances thing, right? The sale on that. And you're like, but then you were able to stop me like, okay, but I might just be getting dragged in by the it's a deal, so I could get the thing. It's like, okay, I'm still going to subscribe and see what's going on here and let myself be pushed down the funnel to see if it's something I really want, as opposed to just diving in at the first, I need it.
Yeah. Because I'm feeling panicked about my inbox, I am going to spend these $40 right now.
Yeah.
And hope that it helps, and it might not. But,
yeah, but you also just feel better when you buy those things. I have so many unfinished courses. Like, but I'm learning to be okay with it. Be like, well, I have lifetime access, like they said, so maybe I'll get back to it. And if I don't,
it's okay too. Which then, you know, like you said about putting our own products out there, I get skeptical of myself and I go, how am I just joining this pool of things that, you know, or people with a message, like you've got a message and then buy this thing. It's like, I also want to just bring my message out here, but how do I survive while I do this too?
Yeah. And like, have you heard the thing before of like, whatever you would do for free, that's the thing you should like actually be charging for. And like, that's so hard, but it makes sense too. It's like, cause the thing that I do for free, I love so much. And so I've put in 10 years of experience learning about this. And so I have something useful to say. And it's that balance between like giving away the free information. One of my favorite people that I follow for business stuff, she's like, if you listen to my podcast, you follow my Instagram, you read my emails, all the information is out there. It's just in pieces. So you have to put it together. So if you wanted to, you could put it all together. It's not that big of a mystery, but I can also put it together for you and you can pay for my course. And so it's like, I don't know. So that's like some worthiness there for sure. So it's like they're making their own choices and you giving stuff away for free and not having enough for yourself isn't going to help anyone else have enough for themselves. You can't be sick to make someone else healthy. Like you can get as sick as you want. It's not going to make anyone else healthier. Those are things that keep going through my head as I'm trying to figure out like, okay, what do I give away? And how do I also be like for the people who have the money to exchange the value, work with me, what value do I give? All that kind of stuff. But yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that I could have started the new year with, like, okay, I'm going to go gung-ho on my Instagram and get all my posts up and get all things up. And it was like, it's just not there yet. My schedule just shifted. I'm just trying to like rearrange things, trying to do health stuff. And then my big goals this year are with parenting. So it's like, don't worry so much. Like it'll come. Like the business goals I have and money goals I have, like it'll come. Let it come when it's ready. Don't try to push it on January 1st because you'll probably fall off 2 weeks later. And then be mad at yourself again.
Yeah. And then someone can sell you a course about how not to be mad at yourself about.
Yeah. And then I can buy a course on how not to give up after 2 weeks and I'll give up after 4 weeks.
Exactly. Look. And then they can say, well, we gave you the value that you were looking for because you didn't give up after 2 weeks. You gave up after four.
You made it to four. And then here, do you want a 4-week course?
Right.
Upsell.
Yeah. I did take a course creation class that kind of felt like they were teaching you a little bit of that, like promise just enough and also not enough so that no one can really tell you you didn't give them the value you promised. Right. And I was like, I guess there's some legal liability wisdom there, but also I just want to add more value to the world than that. And I don't understand whether or not that's possible in capitalism.
In free exchange, like that is what people like. Anytime you make an exchange, at least at the moment of the exchange, both people win. Like this is a like misunderstanding. Like if you buy a coffee mug, it's because you value the coffee mug more than the money that the coffee mug costs, and the person is selling the coffee mug at whatever price it is because they value the money more than they value the coffee mug. So actually exchanges are, they're always win-win, at least at the moment. Right, not talking about buyer's remorse. Right, but it's like so it's always an exchange. But then we get, I think a lot of things that get piled on top of that are unfair exchanges, right? Of companies that use their might and their force and their connection with regulators to push their way in. And so then I think it can be really disheartening for a small person. Like the thing I always get anxious about is taxes and legal stuff. Like you're saying, like if I sell this course and someone doesn't get what they wanted, am I going to be stuck legally, lawsuits and liability and all this kind of crap? Whereas like, but at a person to person level, I'm trying not to worry about it so much and put out there like, I'm trustworthy, you're trustworthy, let's do our best and let's believe in each other and kind of go from there. But like we see so much hard stuff, and then also at the small level you have so many hoops to jump through, like all the regulations, they don't want a small producer to do well. Like they like, there's so many things that they put on, and we don't have a massive legal team to just like pay for infractions. But I think in real free exchange, that's what it is. It's I'm offering value, you offer value back, and we exchange it, and it's great. But it gets muddied a lot. More money is a combination of good and bad, right? Because rich people are evil, and rich people do this, and rich people do that. But also you want to have more money. But it's pretty hard to get yourself to have more money if you think that having more money is bad. And how many of us have been taught that having more money is bad? I don't know. And there's, again, there's a lot of evidence, supposedly, of people who do terrible things with their money. But there's also lots of people, I think, who do a lot of very good things with their money, but they're not in the news. They didn't do a bad thing. I don't know. Money stuff is weird and hard. Yeah.
It is. And you're right that exchanging our effort for value is helpful. It's a democratic economic system, and that is good. And how it gets used against us can be bad. And it all has to do with our well-being, because it's our ability to pay for what we need. And I've made some life choices that are a little outside the norm, just to live on as little as possible, because I don't know what to do about making enough money. And at this point, for me, it feels like I either sell out or I figure out how to live out of a storage locker. And I would prefer to live out of a storage locker than give away my brilliance to someone else's goals. And yeah. I don't know how long that can last for me, but so far it's okay enough. And I also am frustrated by it enough to want to change it. And I don't know what's next for me, but it feels unknown enough to be hopeful and also terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to make those different choices, I mean, we've made different choices just with, like, I don't know, just certain values. It's just the intentional choices. It's just anytime you're a person who's making an intentional choice, especially if it seems different from everyone else, and especially if people have opinions, like, that makes it a lot harder. But I think we also forget, like, the world is infinite. So the possibilities for lining up all your different values are there. It's just, I don't think we see it often enough, and we get so caught up in where we currently are. It sounds like what you did is you said, okay, I have these two choices. I can, like you said, either sell out or I can stay more true to myself. And although staying true to myself has its own difficulties, that choice feels better. So I'm going to choose the choice that feels better. And it's, I've been kind of thinking about the stuck between a rock and a hard place argument. Like, oh, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, as if there's two bad arguments or there's two bad choices. Yeah, but one of them is better. Mm. One of them is better. They're two different places. So just pick the better one, and then you'll find yourself in a slightly better place. And making just those little incremental better choices for you. And even the choice that you think is better. My husband made a choice about a job, and you had mentioned something similar, where it's like, I thought I needed the money, so that's the choice that I made to go take the job. And that's totally fine. You made a decision, and now you can make a choice, and your choice is, oh, that was not the right decision. And you just make a new one. Like, we put a lot of weight on all the things that we decide. This is something that came up from someone that I follow on Instagram, who's amazing. And she's like, we think that we make a choice and then we have an experience. And she's like, no. You make a decision, you have an experience, and then you make a choice. And I just like that change of, like, there's no right answer. There's no wrong answer either. Pick a thing, see what happens, and then make a new choice. So it's, I don't know, that helped a lot for me, and we've talked about before, like, growing up in the go to school, get good grades, go to college, da 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 da. And then, like, here's the path of things that you're supposed to do. And it's like, there is no path. There's what other people have done, and there's what's presented to you. Yeah, just like, it's fine. Do the next thing. And so figure it out. So yeah, I think you made a choice for what feels best to you. And as you said, it feel that you have it wide open. So it's like, if it's wide open, then just wait until that next choice that feels best. You know, if you don't have to make a choice, if you're not immediately being thrust into a decision point, and don't worry about it then, you know, make the next best choice that you can. I think a lot of us get stuck with the sunk cost fallacy of, oh, I've already put this much time or this much energy or this much effort or even this much lip service into a way of thinking or a way of being. And you're like, I can't make a new choice because I've said so much about this and so people will judge me, or I've spent so much money on this or so much time on this. It's like, who cares? You can take all of that with you into a new thing that makes you feel better. It's fine.
Yeah. Feeling better is worth it. You're so right.
Yeah. And just making like that little bit better choice. And how much better does it feel also to make the choice that just feels in alignment with yourself? Even if it's maybe not the quote unquote best choice, according to someone else's logic.
Yeah.
I'm going to do at least what I believe in, you know, like
at least that.
Belief, I think it's belittled a lot today. Yeah.
Well, you're right. And same for feeling good. I feel like we get told that we need to suffer enough to be doing good, that, you know, feeling better is not the goal. Yeah. You gotta work, and then you'll feel better, and that, or do the thing that makes you feel worse until you feel better, and then you'd never feel better. Yeah. And wait a minute, what if feeling better first helps me get to where I want to be? And that, I have seen that in my own life. Yeah. And said, I think that's why I've made the choice that I've made, because I had to face a lot of trauma to do it. It was like, actually being unhoused is my biggest fear, because I've been there before and I don't want to be there again. And so,
yeah,
why am I making a choice now that kind of looks similar? And it's because I really believe that this feels better than giving up more of myself to have enough money to have my own housing. I can live, you know, like I say, I live in community care. Wherever I am, I'm giving value and helping other people who, it seems like, I'm noticing we're all kind of struggling to uphold our own little pieces of the world, that when it comes to cleaning and organizing and just maintaining these lives that we have to pay for, it has helped the people that I stay with to have me show up and say, well, I'll do all your laundry while I'm here, and I'll help, you know, figure out some of the things that fall through the cracks while you're at work. And that is of value, and maybe not monetary value, but I'm okay with being not of much monetary value right now. And usually I'll say, it's just going to be a chapter of my book someday. This is all just part of, part of the journey.
Yeah. So two things on that. So one, I thought of recently, my friend and I have been messaging back and forth about similar ideas, but I think the worst thing that we're taught as kids and adults too, that's reinforced, is that your feelings right now are not as important as the people around you, as other people's feelings. And your feelings right now are not as important as the feelings in the future, which is what you alluded to, of like, you need to feel bad now so you can feel good in the future. And it's like, actually the only thing that's important is how you feel now. Like other and other people, the most important thing to them is how they feel. And it's not about the future, because there's no guarantee to the future. People are like, oh no, you have to suffer now so you'll like succeed in the future, but the future isn't guaranteed. Well, okay, so I'm just gonna potentially always suffer. Cool. Like excellent. It's not confusing. And then like, other people's feelings are more important than your own. Well, how are you going to know what feels good if you're always worrying about how other people feel? We learn it in so many different ways, and it's reinforced in so many different ways. So it's like, if you can come back to just like, what feels a little bit better? And you're probably going to make not even mistakes. You're going to go, I think this will feel better. And then you make a decision and you're like, oh, that doesn't feel better. Or even, okay, that feels better, but now I'm here and now this doesn't feel good. So now I want to feel better. And now I feel better. Oh, but now there's something about it. It's like, it's a continual evolution of stuff. And then the second thing you mentioned was the value, is because money is such a big focus. We forget about all the potential things that money can represent and all the things that it doesn't even touch, right? It only touches certain things. And because as a mom who does more stay at home than not stay at home, I work part-time. So it's a couple hours and my kids are with my mom. But as a stay at home mom, people will talk about like, oh, breastfeeding is free or daycare is free. But it's like, so when did motherhood get reduced to the monetary value? What are you talking? There's so much more to this. It's like, breastfeeding is free. Money wise, it's free, but it's not valueless. I mean, art's a great example of like, it's so, you can see the subjectivity in art. It's harder to see the subjectivity in other things. And it's like, yeah, some things aren't monetary. And the whole idea of exchanging money was, and I don't know if this is actually how it happened, but the story is, we used to exchange value for value, as in, hey, can I stay at your house? I'll do some chores for you. I'll do some things you don't want to do. I can help you out. It's like, that's a big exchange. And then it was just eventually we're like, oh, let's have something to represent that exchange. But it's like more often, I think for the human component of us, we should probably go back to more of the value for value exchanges in the sense of doing things for others and exchanging services and worth and value and knowledge and whatever else. And yeah, I think that gets pushed a lot is the money versus what are all the other things that goes along with it.
Yeah. The money's not the goal. It's the representation. It's like the middleman.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's lots of people that like talk about it as like, it's an energy exchange. Like it's just a physical representation of an energy exchange. And so that's something I've been working on this last year, now into this year, is being more okay with letting money go to buy the things that I think are of good quality or will make my life better, and being less afraid of losing it because I bought something I didn't like or whatever. And so more like, okay, no, this will add value. I don't have to make do. I can keep moving through life and things will come back. And sometimes you make mistakes, but yeah, if you're always calculating it, then you're also always stuck in the quantifiable value as opposed to everything else, like everything else.
Yeah. Because it does feel different when you're doing it for money too. Like all the loads of laundry that I've done for folks, if you be like, I'm going to pay you to do my laundry, I probably need more money than you would think, because this feels kind of like a job that I should be paid this X number of dollars for, where instead of it being, well, I'm happy to do this because I have this free place to be, and that feels good to both of us, instead of now we're both in this kind of contracted calculating, like you say, where it's like, well, every penny needs to add up, that it feels like the abundance is flowing more, where it's like, I'm giving to you, you're giving to me, the value that's here is flowing. Yeah. And that when you talk about breastfeeding being free, you know, I haven't breastfed, I'm not a parent, but I think about the people I know who have, who need to nourish themselves so much more. And if you're eating good food and drinking good stuff, that's expensive. And that it's costing a lot to nourish the body that has to produce these things. And that folks who try to go without, or, you know, don't eat or drink as much, often have trouble with the breastfeeding side, because they needed more resources than they had to produce that. That it feels expensive still. High value.
It's funny, because on the other side of the argument, then people are being like, oh, but you know, you're breastfeeding like 40 hours a week or whatever. Even I can't remember what it was, but it's an insane amount of time, especially with a newborn or whatever. So then they're also like, but then that somehow turns into an argument for just like moms getting money. And it's like, that's devaluing it too on either end. Like, whether you think it's free or it's this thing that is really valuable, it's like, I've thought, because with formula, it's like a race to the bottom. Because if you don't breastfeed, you do have to buy formula. So you like, that is something that you have to do to feed your kid. But there's like a race to the bottom for the cheapest ingredients, cheapest formula. And I'm like, how much is that also devaluing breastfeeding? Because then it's like, oh, well, formula only costs this much. How important is breastfeeding? But if we actually had quality ingredients in formula, we're actually like making sure that it's locally sourced and all that kind of stuff, that price, at least initially, is going to be really high. But the value of that product is going to be very different than a race to the bottom formula. And so why are we so focused on the money? What's the value behind it? I mean, that's the whole problem with they print money. It's like, oh yeah, just give people money. Money isn't value. Like, giving people money doesn't make us any richer. It just makes us all have more money. And then it doesn't mean as much. And even what you're saying, like the exchange of, like, it's the exchange of care. And if you turn it to money, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's just this one thing, as opposed to, no, but I'm, you know, I'll make this, I'll do your laundry and all this kind of stuff. Oh, thank you for doing that for me. You're already staying in my house, but hey, I made a great meal. Do you want to come eat with us? And then also it allows for the flexibility of, hey, I got some of your laundry done, but I just like couldn't quite get enough done because blah, 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 blah. And then it's still a care thing of like, oh, I'm so sorry that you're struggling with it. Like, you just allow for more flexibility. And if we can keep that in mind, and money being like a background thing, or in your case, you're not exchanging money, you're exchanging caring for each other and being, and like, you, yeah, like, I don't know. We get so, it's just so much, we're just so caught up on the money thing. And I get it, because right now the dollars are not as useful as they used to be because everything's so expensive. So I get it. And maybe let's be more creative with how we can exchange things and share things beyond the dollar.
Beyond the money. Yeah. The community where I manage a farmer's market, we're trying to do more free stuff, just like give it away. People have so many extra kitchen utensils and things that it's like not even having a garage sale, but just being like, here's a free sale. Just come take it if you need it, because I don't need five spatulas. Like, I've got the two I like, the rest can go in a box, and I don't need a dollar for the spatula. Just take it.
Just take the spatula.
I think a lot of us have gotten exhausted enough to actually embrace kind of the fringe feeling of just giving freely, and that there is some benefit emotionally to that, where you're like, wow, I really helped somebody. And, you know, I remember.
And also I don't have this extra thing with me. Like, I do this thing every once in a while. I'll clean out a bunch of stuff. And then like 6 months later, I'll be like, oh God, I got to clean out that stuff. And then I go, I'm like, oh, I already did. I don't even appropriately emotionally get rid of the thing. It's like still weighing on me.
It's still in a drawer somewhere.
It's still taking up space somewhere. And so it's like, the more you have, the more literal baggage you have, the more not so literal baggage you have on you. And so it's so nice, especially if someone else can use it. Like, that's, again, value is completely subjective. And it's so funny. I mean, you can see that between like Craigslist versus Marketplace versus a buy nothing group. Like, the same thing could be on all three places priced very differently, because it just depends on who has it and who doesn't. There's people that like thrive on going, getting things from Craigslist and reselling it, or just buying the used things. And I want to get new things that are helpful for us. I'm done making do, but I am not ready to buy a $500 dresser. I just think there's enough dressers out there that I'll find the dresser I need from somebody else who doesn't want it anymore. And I'm willing to pay them instead of getting it for free or whatever. And it's, finding all those different ways to just see how things move around. And my husband and I, we've moved a lot. We've been together for almost, I think, over 15 years now. And we've lived in two places for 2 years. That's how much we've moved in 15 years.
Wow.
And so we always are getting rid of stuff. And now we're stuck in one place. And it's like, we still got to make sure we're getting rid of stuff, because, can't have it.
And I'm sure with young kids, things accumulate and then get grown out of. And then
we want to have more kids. And I decided I'm not storing kids' clothes.
Mm.
Like, I'm not storing clothes for the next kid. I'm just, when we're done with it, I'll keep like a couple of the things, keepsake items. I'm just letting it flow through, because I got five giant garbage bags full of boys' clothes for free. I'm like going through it. I'm only keeping maybe a third of it, and they're nice clothes. They're already used, and I'm just going to be moving those through. And then once he grows out of them, keep moving them through again. Because it's like, well, if this happened now, it can happen again. Oh, and I could give this to someone else. I love giving stuff. Family Pathways is the thrift store near us, and I just love this like local thrift store and being a part of that. Now I'm like, get to give these good clothes. They're super nice clothes. Because they had so many of them, none of them got overused, like my clothes with my kids, because I only keep so many. And then it's like disgusting. I'm like, I'm sorry, all the other moms, I cannot pass this on. Thank you, all the moms who keep their kids clean.
Some things have to find the end of their useful life, and I am here to do that.
I actually thought that the other day. I'm like, I'm like the end user. Like, our cars are both used, and they're like, both our cars are over 10 years old now. We're not selling this for money. This will not.
Which is still a service. And who knows, you know, I had a car that it was the first car I bought all by myself, and I kept it running, and it was still good, but it was not great. It was good enough. And I knew that trying to sell it would be a pain in the butt, because it was like, well, you know, what would I charge for this? $1,000 to not have somebody fight and try to, you know, finagle it down. And I was like, I'm going to find somebody to just give this to, because a working vehicle for free would be a huge gift.
Huge item for a lot of people. Yeah.
It worked out great. And he even texted me after he'd taken it to the shop. He had to do probably about $1,000 worth of work on it. He's like, I am so excited that this is all I had to pay for this vehicle. This is great. I'm like, heck yeah, everybody wins. Yeah. I didn't have to, even just that emotional space of negotiating is not my favorite. I even took a class on negotiating in college, because I knew that I needed to get my skills up. And honestly, I was very surprised that they said that I was a good negotiator because I care about people and that I'm not trying to just get what I want bottom no matter dollar, what. Yeah. It was kind of, there was an exercise that the teacher thought that I had cheated because I subverted the negotiation. It was like each person that was negotiating needed a different piece of the same thing, but there were only so many of the thing. So someone had to lose, but actually no one had to lose because one person needed the outside and one person needed the inside. And I actually was like, well, I started the negotiation with, all I really need is the outside of this. So I'm curious what you need. And the other person was like, well, actually I need the inside. So can we just share? I was like, great, let's do that. And then we're like, we're done. So I'm so scared of negotiating, but I think if you come at it from a human perspective, it's not that bad. But
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. It still stresses me out. So then I just give things away, but self-worth feels like
I just buy things at face value. I'm like, that seems like a reasonable price. So I'm just going to buy it. And then if the price isn't reasonable, I'm like, well, then I'm just not going to buy it. You think it's worth this much. I'm not going to fight you on it.
I know.
But I'm going to move on.
I know. Cause it feels so icky to argue, but maybe that's my own fear.
But in the US, like, that's not what we do. Like, haggling isn't a big thing, but then you hear about other countries where that is the thing. So I think it's also potentially just like a cultural thing. Like in other countries, I might be like, well, I mean, I'm going to accept it at this level, but hey, maybe someone will buy it at this level. And even that, I think you could do in good faith in the sense of like, well, I mean, I only think it's worth this much, but maybe someone, and, you know, and yeah, I think part of it is just culturally. I'm like, I think even what you're saying, like, you just, if you're just honest too, like, oh yeah, that's too much. I'm like not trying to mess with anything. That's just too much money for me. Sorry. Oh, sorry. You wanted this? Okay, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I will do that. Yeah. And that has worked out sometimes. I think being someone who has had to sell things of my own making for so long, I feel insulted when people say, you know, oh, well, I'll give you this much for it. So I don't want to insult other people. And so then I just go for whatever the listed price is. Yeah. But
it's like, I believe you. I don't know how much. Yeah. I don't know how much work that was. Yeah. No, I started knitting and crocheting and I would love to have more organic fiber, real fiber stuff. And I'd like to make more things too. But sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, but to buy all the yarn and do all this. So then when I see like something that's handmade, you're like, yeah, no, I get why that's that much money. The crocheting thing has been interesting because you see people posting like machines cannot crochet right now. There is no machine that can crochet. So if you see a crocheted item, and if you know what that crochet stitch is, it was made by a person. And so if it's at Target for $12, that person is not getting paid well. I guarantee you that. Like, that's what I've heard. Now, people are also like, machines can't do it. I was like, well, give people a couple years. I'm sure people will figure it out. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I never know what people can do. But currently, if there are no machines that can crochet, then yes, that's a person doing that.
Interesting.
But also, there's some people that are super speedy at their job. If I'm crocheting it, it's going to cost you $150 even if it's this big because of how long it's going to take me. Even if you're paying me a quarter an hour.
It's still going to be expensive because I'm slow.
Yeah, but if you see that, I mean, have you ever seen those videos of just people who are just amazing at their job? Like where it's just like whatever they're doing is like so fast. You're like, how did you even develop the coordination for all of that? Oh my gosh.
Like I'll watch Street Food. Those are those fast, like you're just chop, chop, chop. That stuff's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like those efficiencies, learning how to do those. That's a skill. And it's like, yeah, I should pay you a little bit more because I can't do that even close. Like, even if I take my time, my cucumber is not going to be cut evenly.
Let alone beautifully.
Let alone like lovely and like flying into my platter or whatever. Which actually we've talked about that with farming, just thinking about coming into the new year. Before we started this episode, we were talking about like, hey, as farmers, as you're making goals for the new year, maybe it's to be faster, be more efficient at these certain times, you know, maybe right now isn't the best time to make those resolutions because by the time you implement it, you may have forgotten about it. And maybe right now it's a better time to sort of think about how do you want your growing season to go? And then maybe revisit or think of doing the resolutions or goals or whatever in the new year. Which could include like, okay, I'm going to figure out how to get super efficient at blank. Who do I need to talk to? What do I need to do? But yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about like I've worked with farmers from, you know, immigrants and who farmed in their home country. And then they come here and you're like, how did you do that fast? Like, I don't understand. Like, physically, how did you harvest that fast? How did you, whatever the thing is, that fast, and like learning to develop those skills. Yeah. It just reminded me of some of those previous conversations.
Yeah. It's making me think about maybe I should buy some, you know, kale and bunches of radishes at the store and then practice my banding and just like time myself go. And see if I can just, cause I get really self-conscious about how quickly I can do that stuff. Just cause where I was training was very, you know, production focused, go fast, even though I didn't really know what I was doing. So I still, you know, when I was working with some friends last summer, I was like, well, I'm really self-conscious about how well I band things. They're like, these are beautiful bunches. What the heck? I'm like, well, I just feel like I was never good enough. So, but yeah. I could time myself. I could just take my rubber bands and time, see if I could go so fast. But I also don't like prioritizing speed. I feel like I'd like to have a life that's not so fast.
I had never even thought about that. I guess with this last few minutes of, we kind of went all over the place with lots of things that are perfectly pertinent to the new year, but just coming back to thinking about as we move into the new year, if you made resolutions, awesome, but maybe, especially as farmers, like for myself, like we're going to have animals, but we don't. And so all of our farm projects aren't going to be happening until the spring. So it might be worth my while, me and my husband coming together in March or April to go, okay, so here's what we need to work on. And instead of just going full bore, or rather getting halted because we're overwhelmed, like spend some time in the spring when it's more pertinent to what we're going to be doing. And if you're working with vegetables or whatever else, like finding the appropriate time to make goals, or maybe even doing it periodically, like if you're going to be starting seeds soon, like talk about those goals first. And then before you start planting, look at goals. And before you start the harvest time, like, so breaking it up to the appropriate moments in your season might be more beneficial than trying to make a whole big, giant, generic, I'm just going to make more money this season.
I know for me, this is my time to make a schedule, because a lot of people have laughed at me for the level of specificity that I schedule everything. But I know that it's all going to kind of be in the wind at some point. So if I have the whole year, week by week, kind of generally figured out, that then if mid-July, I just feel like I can't even think about what I'm supposed to do, I can reference something that says, nice. Well, if I can do this, that will be right on time for having it harvested and ready for this market before the end of the season, that I can, you know, have a little scaffolding that helps. I do like January and February for that kind of planning loosely.
Yeah. That's the trick, right? Last year we were covered in snow. Nothing was thawed and melted and everything to go in the ground until how late? Like we were dealing with building stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then that's why I like the intentions of like, okay, a general intention of like, I want to slow down this year. I don't want to feel rushed. Okay. So what do I need to do? How do I need to do that in January, in February? And also there's the feeling too, of feeling rushed versus actually feeling rushed and not feeling rushed versus actually doing things quickly. You can do things quickly and not feel rushed, or whatever, like pick the feeling that you want. Even if you do have to, all of a sudden you get overwhelmed with harvest, you can still find a way to approach it with that intention or theme or whatever you have for the year. And keeping that in mind can be helpful. And yeah, it's nice having a scaffolding. At the very least, I need to do this. Or yeah, if you're getting lost in the weeds, it's like, okay, oh, here's my plan. Okay, cool. So all this has gone that way and this has gone that way, but I need to try. Okay, now I remember what I'm trying to do. I can do this now.
Yes. Especially for me with vegetables, that planting for fall harvest gets kind of lost in the shuffle of the midsummer chaos, where you're trying to keep up with all the weeds. And, you know, sometimes it's like, wow, I didn't keep up with the weeds on this bed, and something needs to go in the ground, and I don't have any open beds, so why don't I just till it all under and start again? And then that might work this time sometimes. But gosh, you made such a good point about not feeling rushed, you know. You make a good point about going quickly but not feeling rushed. I think that there's a mindfulness to that And that yeah. I kind of reject speed because I automatically feel rushed by it. But if I can mm-hmm. take control and say, you know, maybe I might actually time my banding. I might do some of that this winter and just be like, you know, if the difference is 2 seconds per bunch, is that really going to make a difference for me? And maybe I just want it to, maybe I'm taking the extra 2 seconds yeah. and making it look nice because there's lots of futzing to do, especially, I mean, like radishes, they'll get to me mm-hmm. because you can have these kind of icky yellow leaves that you want to take mm-hmm. out and you want the bunch to look nice. And so yeah. you're kind of futzing with the dead stuff and then you want to band it. And it's kind of, you know, how much do people care about how it looks or how well mm-hmm. it's banded? You know, other growers are a lot more critical of each other's technique than maybe your average customer is, but customers don't like to see those little yellow leaves
yeah.
that, you know, if it's at least looking really good and maybe not the perfect technique of banding, that, you know, everybody's just going to cut those dang rubber bands off and eat the food anyway. So how perfect does it really have to look? But
yeah,
you know, well, we're also yeah. up against the grocery store and people are saying, mm-hmm. why do I need to pay $4 for your bunch when it's $3.99 at the store? And then you want to give them a look like, did you hear what you just said?
Because I don't want to carry around a bunch of pennies. Like, Lord, just give me the $4 like, bills.
Even if it's a dollar difference, that it can be a really big hang up. And that when we come back to the topic of money, like we really do feel mm-hmm. like that dollar is going to make or break us on mm-hmm. both sides of the equation. Yeah. The grower feels like, how dare you think that you need to pay a dollar less? And that the person buying their groceries is like, this is just one of the items on my list. And if I have to pay an extra dollar for everything I buy, mm-hmm. I'm going to go broke. And so yeah. we're kind of standing on either end of this table, like, well, my survival's hanging in the balance and so is yours. What do we yeah. do here? Yeah. And yeah. the ways yeah. that we value each other matter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's so much in there. Value and money and like you valuing your time, both in the sense, maybe I should speed up a little bit on my banding, but also I enjoy making my bunches of vegetables look good and look nice. And so that makes it more enjoyable for me, which then makes it a very simple thing would be like, oh, well just like suffer through banding really, like just suffer through going quickly on the banding and then sell your stuff. And you're like, okay, but now I was miserable for however long it took me to do that. And now I'm selling it at a price. And then now someone's mad at it. It's like, well, I didn't even enjoy doing this. Like,
true.
As you know, as opposed to like finding that enjoyable medium where maybe you could take some time to like, okay, I want it to look like this. How can I make this whole process more efficient where I'm not rushing, but the whole process is taking less time? Or something like that. Like there's other ways to evaluate that. And like, nope, I enjoy it. This is how I enjoy it. This is what makes this whole process enjoyable for me. And then I think on the consumer side, I think it's so great how many people are going to farmers markets, but they like go to it with the same attitude that they go to the grocery store with, which is if something is too expensive, they're like trying to fleece me. Right. And to be fair, when we think about massive grocery store change, massive food chains, it's like, yeah, it's a race to the bottom of how quickly can we grow a thing? How long can we store it? How much can we, you know, there's more of those calculations at the high level. And so I think people sometimes come to the farmers markets with that too. And it's like, you got to change your attitude when you go to the farmers market. Cause like, this is just the value of her radishes and she enjoys doing it. And she like, she takes time with this and all the, and even, yeah, it's just, I think it's so funny, like funny, sad, but funny, like farmers are like combination of like, they grow the food and they're the heroes of America, but also they're trying to make all of us poor with how much their food costs. And you're just like, good Lord, this is their life. Either they're doing it because it's what they've always done, or it's because it's something that they love. And they're not just like racing to the bottom and they got to live too. So it's even just the attitudes that we could bring towards each other and towards the consumer, giving them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that they don't understand the type of work that goes in. And then consumer is giving a benefit of the doubt to the farmer that it's actually quite a bit of work to do this. And they're not yeah. trying to screw you over. They're just trying to keep doing what they enjoy. And if you think it's so much money, maybe talk to your farmer. There's some other ways that you can get your produce for cheaper that exchanges value without money.
True. And I've heard some interesting ways that people have explored that. Like one that I just recently heard about was that it was like a 50-50 share where a person could come and harvest, and then they take home 50%, and then 50% stays with the farm for them to sell. I hadn't heard that before. And usually I am kind of trying to keep an eye on all the different, the different ways to just kind of
come together
and share the value without necessarily making money the centerpiece.
Yeah, one of the downfalls, just experienced
and you're in a field. Yeah. Sometimes you can really damage things and you don't know what you're doing.
Or hurt yourself.
There's
all sorts of different considerations. Like, you can't just like flat out implement something that someone else has done, but it's like good ideas to for inspiration and you know, finding ways that work for you. Like, I worked at Women's Environmental Institute and they have a CSA, right? That if you, at least they used to, it's like if you volunteer so many hours to harvest, you get your CSA box for free or for half off. And but they also had interns and stuff to teach you how to do things, so you weren't just like a free for all on the farm. I think if we could give each other more of the benefit of the doubt, maybe even just give ourselves more of the benefit of the doubt that like, hey, if that's the price you think is right for your stuff, go for it. Like, if that's the appropriate value and you're just like, this is how much I think it is, and I feel confident with that, and then go for it. And I think the people will come. It might take time. There's always a time lag as we do these things. But I don't know. It's funny because I don't think I've ever really felt that at the farmer's market. It's like, my husband always thinks it's so funny that people will like go from gas station to gas station to figure out which one is like cheapest. He's like, it's like 10 cents, you guys. What are you doing? Like, just get your gas and move on. Like, you're at the farmer's market. Just buy the food and move on. If you only brought $10, like, do it that way. Instead of finagling over the individual price of everything on your list, just be like, okay, I can spend $15 at the farmer's market. Here's my list. Oh, okay, I got these three things for $15. I'll get the rest at the grocery store. There's other ways of doing this than like haggling over every little vegetable that you're going to buy.
I do like that, having a budget for the farmer's market. Like, if everybody just was like, oh, I'll spend $25 at the farmer's market this week. Yeah. A lot of times we throw in extras for you, or, you know, that's the beauty, I think, of the market, is that you're a person to a person. And there have been so many times that like, I'll be selling jelly to someone and their kid is like, oh, I only eat grape jelly. And I was like, well, I have this jelly that's kind of like grape jelly. I'll throw it in for you to try in my smallest size.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they come back and buy it, and sometimes they don't, but you know, or you can have your own personal policy of like, if you're using food stamps, I might just give you an extra few things that we can actually see each other and care for each other when we're doing this transaction person to person, instead of, you know, the rigidity of the store is this is the price and this is what you get. And I like giving extra, especially, I mean, I struggled with selling herbs for a little bit because people are kind of afraid of fresh herbs. I think they don't always know how to use them. And so I was selling them for real cheap. It was 50 cents a bunch, I think. People wouldn't touch them. And once they were a dollar a bunch, I would sell more of them.
Funny thing about money is it communicates value in different ways. It can be too much money for somebody, but also it can communicate this is cheap. Like, it's so insane. And so that's why it's like, you just have to decide like what feels best to you to, you know, to sell the thing if you think it's valuable. And then you can also experiment with that, where it's like, well, I want more people to try this. If I give it away for free, they're like, what's wrong with it?
Yeah, if, exactly.
If it makes sense, and they see someone else selling it for $2, it's like, well, what's wrong with your herbs?
Right. Exactly.
And so like, you get to talk to the person, like talk to the farmers. And that's what we do at our farmer's market, because we're a pretty low vegetable family. And that's, so frankly, we don't buy as much at our farmer's market as we used to, but we still go there. We still talk to all the farmers that we become friends with. It's like, we're going to get our carrots from this one stand if we're going to get carrots that day. Like, because our farmer's market is right at our grocery store. So that's kind of the nice thing, is we just, oh, this is what we know we need. And then sometimes we'll go into the grocery store and be like, oh, shoot, I forgot about that. And I run outside and go buy the thing from the farmer. And then go back
I love that.
And like, but yeah, getting to know these farmers and understanding more about it in the community, and like, especially if you're going to your local, well, it's hard in the cities because there's not as many farms that are going to be local to you, but I'm further out. And so I get to know the farmers that are, you know, in my neighborhood kind of, but yeah. And you never know what you can find out. Like, I've found our raw milk provider by becoming friends with the farmer's market stand, and they can't sell raw milk at the stand, obviously. So, but I found out about it. It's like, oh, and you're only 15 minutes from here. Oh, well, we'll just stop by. And so it's, yeah, you can find out things and then, you know, talk to them about their growing practices. Yeah. I think ultimately the benefit of the doubt and just like taking time to get to know people, which is hard because when you go to the grocery store, you don't talk to anybody. Why would you talk to anybody? They're just employees of a giant chain. Like, true. I get it.
I've tried talking vegetables with the people in the produce department and they do not care.
They don't. My favorite is at the grocery store when someone doesn't know what like a common produce item is. You're like, it's a red onion. I mean, oh. I don't think I've had anything that dumb, but you're like, they're like scanning, like, because like if you didn't pick up the one with the sticker, right?
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
What is it? And you're like, it's a peach.
Yeah. I did have a moment like that with parsnips. They were like, are these turnips? I'm like, parsnip, but yeah. This is a turnip. I also have a turnip here. So see, now you know.
Yeah. Consumers absolutely do not have to know what all the vegetables are. I feel like if you work in the produce department at the grocery store or you're the like checkout person,
like the cashier,
get familiar. Yeah. Maybe get familiar with the produce.
So funny. Wow. Hopefully our disillusionment with the world can maybe make us more close to each other. Like, if you're frustrated about the grocery store, go to the farmer's market and maybe see if you like that better. Because I have way more fun shopping for my groceries at the farmer's market than I do at the grocery store.
Way more fun. Yeah. And most of them, I feel like they'll have music or they have things for kids. Like, you can make it a little thing, or you can just be like on a mission and do your groceries. Like, you can make it what you want. They have a lot of available.
Yeah. And we love all kinds. You know, it's fun to sit and chat with somebody about why they love kohlrabi. And it's also kind of fun when someone's like, okay, I want this, 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 and this. Here's your money. Thanks. Bye. And then you can just go on with your day, because I don't always have the emotional energy for every single customer to be a long conversation.
Well, and especially if someone has a whole long list of things and all of a sudden you're like, sweet, 20 bucks. Yeah, bye.
Yep. Like, have a good day. Got what you need. I got what I need. So
yeah. Well,
this feels like a good stopping point and time to go.
Yeah. The new year. I'm excited for this year. I think it's going to be a good year, but also just trying to take it kind of one day, one week at a time. And well, we'll keep talking, obviously. So hope you have a good rest of your day.
I hope you do too. And, you know, we'll both keep doing what we're doing. Keep on trying. Thanks for being my friend. It's nice
Thanks
to just
for calling me into this world and letting me chat.
It's really refreshing to get to talk with you. I feel like I feel hope and joy after we've had time to connect. So thanks for being absolutely. You.
All right. Well, I gotta head out. Cool.
Sweet. Bye. Bye.